The finger pointing and back and forth sounds very familiar to Americans, I have to say. Our states have also had their issues and ups and downs with the federal government. Well, let's end with some good news. Give people some hope. Because you have been reporting and writing that the vaccine rollout in Canada is beginning to accelerate. What are you looking for in the next weeks and months?
Yeah, I think what gives us hope is that we're really going to pick up steam very soon. We've vaccinated almost 9 million people with one dose. So by June, maybe by Canada Day, July 1st, we should have almost all adults vaccinated in this country. So the promise is there, and we just have to get over this hump of lack of supply, and we'll have a lot of supply fairly soon.
That is Andre Picard, columnist at the Globe and Mail. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News.
From the KTOO newsroom, I'm Pablo Arauz Peña with your state and local news update. There were avalanches off of Mount Juno on Tuesday. Juno residents reported hearing them overnight, but there still remains considerable avalanche danger in downtown Juno. CBJ Emergency Programs Manager Tom Matisse says there was no damage to any houses downtown.
You could see that the Barron's Avenue path had a big avalanche. The White subdivision had an avalanche that cleared out the entire upper path and came down within 150 feet of homes. And other areas on Mount Juno, including Chop Gully that comes down across the Froome Trail, had small avalanches, but there's still a tremendous amount of snow up there.
The White subdivision avalanche was about a foot deep. The Barron's Avenue avalanche was about 2 to 3 feet deep, but it didn't occur along the main avalanche path.
The path that slid into the Barron's runout actually started to the left of the Barron's starting zone, so it really didn't even affect the danger from the mass of the Barron's starting zone.
Matisse says there's still a lot of the season's snow on top of Mount Juno. He says Tuesday night slides were likely prompted by warming temperatures and an inch of precipitation earlier this week. Meanwhile, the State Department of Transportation plans avalanche control activities on Gastineau Peak this afternoon, weather permitting. Thane Road will be closed from 3 to 6 p.m. today, maybe longer if heavy equipment has to clear the road of any avalanche debris. And Capital Transit riders in Juneau will notice something brand new and very cool this week. The first battery electric bus in the fleet entered service yesterday on the Mendenhall Express route. It's one of the first electric public transit buses in Alaska. KTOO's Matt Miller got a sneak peek and tells us what it's like to ride it.
You can actually hear conversations in the back of the bus.
You can. It is really quiet. It doesn't rattle it near as much. It's a carbon fiber body. It's not a metallic body. So it definitely does dampen the noise a little bit.
Hal Colm is at the wheel of a brand new battery electric bus. The Capital Transit supervisor is completely unflappable, simultaneously providing commentary to passengers over the PA and paying attention to traffic despite all of the distractions. The only other sounds we hear are the bus interior's ventilation fans and sometimes a very faint whirring sound of the bus's electric motors.
As you can tell, I haven't touched my brakes once since we've been on this run. Everything is just done automatically or just the brakes are engaged as soon as we let off the accelerator. So it's recharging as we're going.
Colm says he and the other drivers like it. It's a smooth ride, and it actually accelerates better than a diesel. And here's a surprise about the range. It takes about 4 hours to recharge, and then it can go all day.
I have driven it on the equivalent of an 8-hour route, and I had 25% power left over after an 8-hour day. And that was on a 40-degree day when I did it, so it wasn't a warm day by any means. So it is very capable of running a route for us.
Mark Hollenbeck of bus manufacturer Proterra says they put the bus's batteries under the floorboards between the wheel wells.
We don't put batteries on the roof, and we don't put batteries in the rear, which is the most high impact of all. Because most transit buses, when they get into an accident, they're rear-ended. Battery packs are extremely heavy, and putting them on the roof, you know, messes with your center of gravity. Our batteries being on the floor of the bus reduces the center of gravity and creates a better ride.
In addition to less noise, better ride, and no emissions, battery electric buses have a fraction of the moving parts that usually wear out or need repair.
You got diesel mechanics that now are training to be electric mechanics, right?
Yeah, which is pretty cool. Pretty open-minded mechanics.
Katie Kester is head of the CBJ's Engineering and Public Works Department, which oversees Capital Transit. She says there'll still be plenty of things to keep those mechanics busy.
The reality is there's not a lot of regular maintenance that is needed on the electric systems themselves. That's one of the beauties of an electric bus, right? You're not changing the oil and doing things like that. But there's still a lot of systems on this bus that are like any other bus, and you know, the heating and the cooling and the hydraulics to get the ADA accessibility.
Kester says the bus and its charging station totaled nearly $1 million. It was covered by the Federal Transit Administration's Low or No Emission Grant Program and Alaska's share of the Volkswagen Settlement Fund.
And here behind the Heritage is going to be our new Valley Transit Center. And so we are going to have 30 park and rides back behind here. We'll come back in here. We'll load up. All of our Valley transfers will be at this location. We will have charging stations for electric buses here. This is going to be a full-fledged, lovely transit center. We'll have a break room in there.
Seven more buses are on order. At 35 feet long, they'll be 5 feet shorter than the first bus so they can better navigate through Douglas Island neighborhoods. Proterra's Mark Hollenbeck says the battery electric buses have a minimum usable life of 12 years, phasing out Capital Transit's existing diesel buses when they come to the end of their life is part of a CBJ goal of using 80% renewable energy by 2045. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
In other news, the arrival of the trumpeter swan is a signal that spring is here, whether or not the weather agrees. There have been over 20 spotted on the Taya River near Dyea this week. KHNS's Mike Swayze talked with Klondike Gold Rush National Historical Park biologist Elaine Furbish about the return of the swans.
So every spring, we have swans passing through Skagway on their way back north to their breeding grounds up in the boreal areas of Canada and Alaska. And the two species that could come through here are trumpeter swans and tundra swans. And by far, the most common species that is seen are the trumpeter swans.
Furbish admits the two are exceptionally difficult to distinguish from each other. They are almost the same size. The tundra swans have a tiny yellow coloration on their beaks next to their eyes, slightly different beak structure, and a higher-pitched whooping call. The trumpeter swans tend to have a lower-pitched call that sounds a bit like a French horn. The Park Service hosts a water bird monitoring program that runs most years, though it was paused in 2020. The program will start again at the end of this week to monitor water-related migrating birds that come through Skagway and Dyea. According to Furbish, the trumpeter swans will typically land in Dyea this time of year and briefly feed on vegetation in the Taya River. When the water is at a high level, it's a curious sight to behold.
It's called dabbling. They're reaching for the vegetation under the water, and they stick their butts up in the air, and they look like little white pyramids on the water.
The trumpeter swan is the world's largest waterfowl, with adult males typically in the 28-pound range, with some growing in excess of 35 pounds. They are monogamous and breed once a year, with their eggs reaching up to 5 inches in length. The swans aren't expected to stay for long. Furbish says many of the trumpeter swans are headed north to Marsh Lake in the Yukon Territory near Whitehorse for an extended visit. There's a viewing area at the lake called Swan Haven where they tend to congregate by the thousands. But before they head up and over the pass from Dyea, they typically wait for favorable weather.
A lot of it has to do with the weather. They don't want to fly into a gale force headwind any more than we would. And, you know, so they'll wait for the good weather before they take up their journey again.
Reporting from Skagway, I'm Mike Swift.
The Dunleavy administration is no longer seeking private vendors to replace six state-run DMV offices. The department that includes the Division of Motor Vehicles sent a letter Wednesday confirming that it would keep state-run DMVs open in Haines, Homer, Valdez, Delta Junction, Eagle River, and Toke for at least another year. And you're listening to KTOO News in Juneau.